Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 10 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday, the 6th of March, 2026. Hello, I'm Andrew, your presenter, and I'm joined this week by Alison. And in the news this week, black marks for Yarmouth's green performance. Rupert Lowe names his candidates. Tributes to a unique ship's captain. And the iconic Boating Lake Cafe is set to open again this year. All this and more coming your way during the next hour or so. And as we sit here on a lovely sunny afternoon, we'll get straight on with the first part of the news. Alison, would you like to start us off, please?
Hello, everyone. Great Yarmouth Borough Council recycled just 31.3% of its waste, according to data published by the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. The figures show that the best performing Norfolk Council was Broadland, which recycled 53.3% of its household waste. The national average was 42.4%. Out of Norfolk's seven district authorities, which are responsible for recycling, three were below the average. All Norfolk councils fell some way short of government targets. Ministers have challenged all local authorities to recycle 65% of household waste by 2035. All waste that is not recycled is sent to an incinerator or placed in landfill. Great Yarmouth's rates put it in the bottom quarter of all councils in England. The latest figures relate to 2023 to 24. Great Yarmouth has been the worst performing in the county in every year since at least 2010 to 11. A spokesman said the authority should be compared with those in other areas of the UK with a similar housing and demographic mix, rather than neighbouring councils. He said, recycling rates in Great Yarmouth compare favourably with locations with a similar housing and demographic mix. The council continues to work hard with residents to improve recycling rates via a number of initiatives, such as educating people on how to reduce contamination of recycling bin contents. This work has been targeted in a number of areas, including Cobham and the Barrack Estate, and has seen positive results with letters and leaflets for households as part of the education process. Trevor Wainwright, leader of the opposition Labour group on the council, said, "We have a very transient population, certainly in some of the most deprived wards of the borough, and it's very difficult sometimes to educate people on what to recycle. We need more environmental rangers to carry out the tasks and not be called from pillar to post, just to concentrate on actually getting that recycling rate up. But everything comes down to money. We've been under serious financial pressure with our settlements over the last 14 years, so we've had to make cuts. The town, which is consistently ranked as one of the most deprived areas in the country, has implemented various initiatives over the years to encourage locals to dispose of waste correctly. Recent efforts include bin stickers urging people to recycle the right stuff and inspections of waste containers. Other Norfolk councils to fall below the national average include Norwich at 38.6% and Breckland at 39.7%.
MP for Great Yarmouth, Rupert Lowe, has officially announced five candidates that will be campaigning to become county councillors for Great Yarmouth First in the May elections. It comes after Mr. Lowe officially launched his new national political party, Restore Britain, at the Britannia Pier Theatre in Great Yarmouth on Friday, February the 13th. Now, for the candidates, Michael French may be said to look like the actor Alec Baldwin, who starred in many hit films, including The Hunt for Red October and Beetlejuice. But, unlike the American actor, Mr. French joined Norfolk Police in 1990 as a constable. Later on, he worked as a sergeant and focused on frontline policing. For 25 years, he worked with the Firearms Response Team and Royal Protection Unit and was a close protection officer in the county for the royal family and politicians. John Whedon will be standing as Great Yarmouth First's lead candidate. Mr. Whedon was a special constable with Great Yarmouth Police and later worked in the civil service for 20 years at the Department for Work and Pensions. He now works as Mr Lowe's Constituency Officer Manager in Great Yarmouth. Barry Gravenall is Director and IT Consultant at IT-C Support Solutions Limited, based in Goulston. He's also owner-operator of a holiday-let cleaning and management business, which he runs with his wife. Candidate 4, Glenn Hurran, has had senior leadership roles in companies across international energy hubs and held senior management positions within energy, waste and logistics businesses. He served as chairman of Great Yarmouth Port Users Association and got a master's degree in business from the University of East Anglia. And finally, Callum Ward-Kendall said in a post on Mr Lowe's Facebook page, "I've previously worked in Great Yarmouth, but now I run my own local company, making residents and businesses feel safe and secure in their own homes and buildings."
And another article about Mr Lowe. A Norfolk MP is facing criticism over his links with a self-declared racist and ethno-nationalist after photographs emerged of the pair posing together. Chris Mitchell, who calls himself a Nazi Buddhist, claims he was personally thanked by Rupert Lowe following his activism in support of the Great Yarmouth MP's new political parties. Mr Mitchell, who is from Goulston, is a long-time organiser for far-right groups. Since they were established, he has become a vocal supporter and activist for Restore Britain and Great Yarmouth First, frequently urging people to support them in posts on his social media accounts. All his accounts are publicly accessible, and they make frequent claims that he has been given support from Mr Lowe and his team, alongside other posts about his racist and anti-Semitic views. Mr Mitchell, who was formerly the East of England organiser for far-right group Patriotic Alternative, claimed he was told by Mr Lowe that he would not seek to restrict what he posts due to his national views, replying, "Post what you want, I'm for free speech." He also said that Great Yarmouth First candidates congratulated him on his activism and flyering for the party during a launch event last month at the Britannia Pier Theatre. Daniel Candon, a senior Great Yarmouth Conservative councillor, said his apparent links to Mr Lowe's parties were profoundly disturbing. He added, "It would be unreasonable to condemn any politician for a fleeting photograph with someone whose background was genuinely unknown. But let's not kid ourselves. This does not appear to be an isolated or momentary encounter. The individual in question is reported to have been an entrenched extremist activist for Rupert Lowe's group for months. That raises serious questions about judgment, oversight and basic due diligence." But Mr Lowe has dismissed the criticism, calling it a concerted smear campaign, and said his parties would not police opinions of random members of the public. Mr Mitchell openly admits to having racist views in his posts online and in his Telegram channel. In one message, he calls himself a racist, misogynistic, anti-Semitic, Islamophobic homophobe. Mr Lowe's Restore Britain is attracting far-right support due to his hard-line anti-immigration stance, which is seen by many as tougher than reforms policies. The MP has advocated for mass deportations of illegal migrants and has said millions will have to go. Mr Lowe was elected as a Reform MP in 2024, but he was later booted out of the party following a fallout with leader Nigel Farage. The Yarmouth MP did not address Mr Mitchell's claims that he has his support, but called the criticism of his interactions a smear campaign. He said there is a concerted smear campaign against Restore Britain and Great Yarmouth First. "We have made our position abundantly clear on immigration. We want illegals deported, all of them, and mass immigration drastically reversed. If a migrant doesn't speak English, claims benefits, lives in social housing, doesn't work, or even hates our way of life, they will be deported. That is not racist. That is common sense. Restore Britain and Great Yarmouth First are not responsible for policing the opinions of random members of the public. We have our position and we will defend it." Mr Mitchell, responding to criticism about his support of Mr Lowe, said, "I'm going to be one activist out of hundreds of thousands of people. I will never apply for a major role within the party for this reason, but no one can stop me from mass leafleting and promoting. But I will be one of the best activists the party has."
Well, let's have some good local business news, shall we? A Danish company will supply 92 turbines for a wind farm being built off the Norfolk coast. Vestas, one of the world's leading wind turbine manufacturers, will supply, deliver and commission the machines for German energy company RWE's Vanguard West offshore wind farm. Once operational in 2029, the wind farm, which is located around 28 miles off the coast of Norfolk, will generate enough electricity to power around 1.5 million UK homes. It is one of the three wind farm projects making up RWE's Norfolk Offshore Wind Zone. Construction of an onshore underground cable route for the wind farms began in 2023, and it comes ashore at Haysborough and will connect to the national grid at Necton. Earlier this year, the government handed RWE subsidy contracts for 3.1 gigawatts of capacity for its Vanguard East and West wind farms, more than a third of the 8.4 gigawatt allocation awarded to UK developers. Sven Uttermolen, the chief executive of RWE Offshore Wind, said, "Following RWE's success in Allocation Round 7 and our joint partnering with KKR, this turbine supply agreement marks a further important step towards delivering the Vanguard West project. Given RWE's significant offshore experience, we're delighted to be partnering with Vestas, who have extensive expertise in turbine manufacture and delivery." Niels de Baar, president of Vestas Northern and Central Europe and Global Offshore, added, "The momentum behind offshore wind in Europe is building, with the UK government stepping up its commitment in AR7 and projects like Norfolk Vanguard West. This combination of industry partnership and government commitment sends a powerful signal about the UK's determination to drive forward its renewable energy ambitions. We're delighted to collaborate with RWE on the Norfolk Vanguard West project. The project strengthens the UK's long-term energy security goals and helps the consumer with low energy prices."
And in more positive news, pubs, restaurants, hotels and hospitality businesses in Norfolk will be offered training and support through a new £250,000 campaign. Norfolk County Council's Hospitality Matters scheme is part of a £1 million package to support the county's high streets. Hospitality businesses are invited to take part in training courses and could be eligible for a business improvement grant of up to £1,000. The workshops will be both in person and online, covering everything from marketing to menu design and seasonal staffing. Courses will run from May to June for the first cohort and from September to October for the second. A follow-up high-growth programme will also be offered to 24 businesses, with a further business growth grant of up to £2,500. More than 120 retailers and businesses gathered at Thursford last month for the launch of the scheme at the Council's Norfolk Market Towns Conference. Retail excellence courses are also available for high street businesses outside the hospitality sector as part of the package of support.
East Coast College is in the process of redeveloping its Great Yarmouth campus in a multi-million pound project which is being funded by the government's £1.5 billion Further Educational Capital Transformation Fund. More than 70% of the foundations have now been built, while work is underway to install main steelwork to the teaching block and a roof system on the sports block changing facility. Paul Padder, the principal and chief executive of East Coast College, said, "It has been progressing really well. Work has been ongoing on the sports centre. We can start seeing the steel and the structures coming through on the main campus now. Steelwork is in place. It's great to see it all coming out of the ground." Construction on the new campus began in 2024 and is being carried out by Kier Construction. Rebuilding work is taking place on the entire east section of the site, with the old buildings to be demolished. The college, which has up to 2,500 students enrolled on courses at its Great Yarmouth campus, aims to create new facilities which will benefit both its students and the general public as a result of the work. Mr. Padder added, "We're going to get a brand new restaurant and there will be some fantastic catering facilities. It's going to provide an amazing space which will extend out to the wider community. We're open to conversations with community groups and the council about how we could look to use it. Work on completing the new sports facility, which will include the creation of new fitness studios and classrooms, is expected to be completed over the coming months, and the college aims to have all of the rebuilding work completed by September of next year."
Almost 100 roads across Norfolk are to be made safer, with nearly £770,000 to be spent on improvements, including speed limit signs and traffic calming, electronic signs urging drivers to slow down, new footpaths, road markings and improved surfaces will put in place in dozens of towns and villages through Norfolk County Council's Parish Partnership Scheme. Many places, including Great Yarmouth, will benefit from the project. First launched in September 2011, the scheme invites communities to bid for cash to help make roads safer, with the County Council providing £384,000, matched by town and parish councils to provide the schemes. The most popular bids were for SAM signs, mobile units which flash the speed of drivers and encourage them to slow down. There were 31 applications for such units. In previous years, the Safety Camera Partnership has provided half the funding for such projects, but is not doing so this year. However, the County Council has agreed to provide £68,000 towards them. Other popular schemes were village gateways. These are boundary markers at the entrance to villages, with speed limit signs welcoming drivers and encouraging them to slow down. Then TRODS, a low-cost alternative to footpaths, often made using recycled road surface material. And finally, wigwags, part-time advisory 20-mile-per-hour speed limit with flashing school warning lights outside schools. Graham Plant, Conservative-controlled County Hall's Cabinet Member for Highways, said, "The scheme allows us to work together, directly with parish councils, so that we can deliver the improvements that communities tell us they need."
Now Great Yarmouth is due a sprinkling of stardust soon. Firstly, a major name in the world of film and television will be coming to a sci-fi festival on the Norfolk coast this year. Great Yarmouth Comic Con has announced that Paul Anderson, who stars as Arthur Shelby Jr. in the BBC's hit Peaky Blinders television series, will be attending this year's edition. The actor will feature on Shelby Saturday, on Saturday, May the 30th, with the Peaky Blinders a key theme at the event. Philip Wellesby, organiser of Great Yarmouth Comic Con, said, "For Yarmouth, he's a major guest. It's a real achievement to get someone of that standing and CV. He will be signing autographs, doing photo sessions and a Q&A. He was such an iconic figure in the whole series, and it's a real draw to have someone like that attending." It comes as the smash hit television series is to launch a new film, Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, this week. Mr. Welby also confirmed that the event is working on adding more Peaky Blinders stars to its lineup for the year. Now, you can get tickets for Great Yarmouth Comic Con, which I think again is at the racecourse, 2026, here at Great Yarmouth Comic Con 2026 tickets, multiple dates, and that's on the site Eventbrite. Now, he's not the only screen idol do in town, I gather, Alison.
No, because a fan favourite pirate adventure is returning to the stage, with a television star taking centre stage. Pirates Live will set sail at Great Yarmouth's Hippodrome from March the 27th to April the 19th for a limited Easter run, featuring a mix of new faces and returning cast members in the comedy adventure. One of the fresh additions to the cast is Stefan Pejic, who starred as Ebenezer Scrooge at the Hippodrome last Christmas. Pejic will take on the role of a character based on Captain Jack Sparrow, adding his mix of magic and comedy to the high seas adventure. "Honestly, it's uncanny," said Jack Jay, producer of the show. "Every single person stopped what they were doing when he came out in character. For the rest of the day, there was a rumour Johnny Depp had visited the circus. It's going to be so much fun." The show will also introduce a new villain, played by James McKenzie. Best known for his roles as Raven on CBBC and in CBBC's Molly and Mac, McKenzie will become Captain Blackbeard. He made his Hippodrome debut during the Halloween Spooktacular and will return for this Easter's maritime escapade. Familiar favourites will round out the cast, including the comedy double act of Jack Jay and Johnny Mac. Jay returns as Captain Jack Hawkseye, the fearless and pun-loving pirate captain who is ready to defend the shores and battle the baddies, alongside his trusty first mate, serving up the best puns on the high seas. Mac reprises his role as first mate, Pirate Johnny, returning for his annual dose of laughs and fun. The cast will be supported by circus performers, dancers and actors for what organisers call an epic theatrical experience. Pirates Live 2026 will run daily throughout the Easter break and tickets are selling fast.
I have to say, went to see it last year, took our grandson, and it is superb. Jack Jay and Johnny Mac together are a real good duo.
Worth a visit. Definitely.
A woman stole £11,000 of a friend's benefits to pay for beauty treatments, wine and pet insurance. Sharon Twitchett had become friends with the victim, who has autism and a range of learning difficulties, through his friendship with her son. Norwich Crown Court heard the 54-year-old became his financial appointee, meaning she was authorised by the Department for Work and Pensions to manage his state benefits. The court heard her taxi driver licence had been revoked by Great Yarmouth Borough Council after her offending emerged in October last year. Before she was sentenced, Mr James read out a statement from the sister of the victim who said, "Twitchett knew my brother's vulnerabilities and took advantage of him anyway." She said he was not good at all as a result of what has happened and has lost trust in his friends and people in general. The sister said the victim believed Twitchett was his friend who was caring and looking after him, but she had betrayed that. She said he is having to rebuild his trust in people, but that she and the rest of the family would be supporting him. Recorder Nicola Fitches said Twitchett, of Hollyway Galston, had repeatedly exploited your vulnerable victim and only stopped when you were found out. Jailing Twitchett for 19 months, Recorder Fitchett said she stole from him repeatedly, causing him to suffer a serious financial and emotional impact. Rob Pollington, mitigating, accepted this was an extremely serious case with harrowing consequences for a very vulnerable individual. He said the defendant does feel shame and remorse, and he said this arrangement to be an appointee for the victim should never have happened and was a catastrophic mistake. He continued to say Twitchett found herself going further and further down a rabbit hole, having set off with good intentions at the start. He said she accepted full responsibility, but suffers from fibromyalgia brain fog and can't remember doing it. But the barrister said she wants to be a better person. Twitchett was also made the subject of a restraining order banning her from contacting the victim directly or indirectly for 2 years.
Tributes have been paid to a trailblazing woman who worked from a Norfolk seaside town port for several years. Alison Rawlinson, who was a shipmaster with Great Yarmouth-based Guard Line, passed away peacefully at home in late January. She was one of the first female shipmasters of an offshore supply vessel and enjoyed an extraordinary life in a male-dominated industry as a captain. Her husband, Simon Rawlinson, who worked as an engineer on board ships and became Alison's soulmate, said she was amazing. She was kind, had a good sense of humour. She was without doubt my best friend. She just loved it. She always knew she wanted to be a captain. There were some people that didn't appreciate females at sea, but she wanted to achieve that. I think it was a challenge. She was proud of the fact that even though she had these setbacks, she could rise above these idiots and prove them wrong. Born in the village of Blacko in Lancashire, she was inspired by the stories of her father David, who served in the Royal Navy. On leaving school at 16, she signed on as an apprentice with BP Tankers as a deck officer cadet. She joined her first ship in October 1978 in Cape Town, South Africa, and later met Simon on a ship called British Pride. She spent several years working in the offshore sector, with much of her time spent working from Great Yarmouth in the mid to late 1980s. She became one of the first female masters of an offshore supply vessel and joined the Oil Onyx in Great Yarmouth as captain in 1999. She had sailed as chief officer under a former Great Yarmouth Harbour pilot when she was a shipmaster with Guard Line and retired from the maritime industry in 2019. Mr. Rawlinson added she enjoyed her time in Yarmouth. She could sail any ship anywhere in the world. She was just a kind, funny and lovely woman, a special woman.
A remarkable story.
Indeed.
Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service has spent just over £50,000 on the new Zodiac Milpro ERB 400 boats. The craft are having extra kit and equipment fitted so they can respond to water-based emergencies around the county. As well as being used for inland and Broads rescues, the trailer-mounted emergency rescue boats could also be deployed during larger-scale flooding, which has hit parts of Norfolk, such as Attleborough and Long Stratton, in recent years. The new craft will replace the current rescue boats at King's Lynn, Great Yarmouth, Dereham and Carrow fire stations. Additional investment has also been made to introduce a rescue boat into the services training and development centre in Beauthorpe. Crews on fire stations hosting the new boats will get extra training before the new fleet of rescue craft, which are expected to last for 15 years, are put into operation. The services Deputy Chief Fire Officer Scott Norman said, "With more than 200 miles of inland waterways in our county, our firefighters are regularly called out to emergencies in the water and are also required to respond to large-scale flooding incidents. This investment ensures we are not only current and ready to respond to incidents across the county, but will also ensure our firefighters are fit for the future to carry their life-saving work." Fire and rescue services in England do not have a specific statutory duty or funding to respond to flooding incidents, but do have general duties to prepare for emergencies.
A holiday park in Norfolk has been named as one of the best in the UK. Vauxhall Holiday Park in Great Yarmouth has been highlighted in a roundup of the top holiday destinations in the country. It was picked due to its Tropical Waterworld water park, which features slides and splash zones. The water park was described by The Sun as undoubtedly the shining star of the holiday park. The site was also praised for its entertainment, including the Treehouse Adventure Playground, Jungle Golf and Mini Golf. The Park Dean Resort is currently closed for a raft of improvement works costing £5 million, including a new sports bar called Hat Tricks, serving food and drink alongside interactive sports such as shuffleboard. The upgrade will also include fairground golf, immersive Bear Grylls escape rooms, an off-road ranger's driving track, and revamped high and low ropes. In January, Great Yarmouth Borough Council granted planning permission to Park Dean to replace pitches for 35 touring caravans at the holiday park, with 31 static caravans. Guests will be welcomed back to the park at the end of March.
CCTV images have been released after 10 cars were damaged in the same street. It happened in Churchill Road in Yarmouth at around 1 a.m. on February 21st. Police have issued some footage of somebody they would like to speak to in connection with it. A spokesman said, "We know these aren't the best images, but do you know who this might be? Anyone with information, or better pictures and video, should get in touch with the police force, and they can do this by calling 101 and quoting reference 36/12420/26.
The leader of Norfolk County Council has called for police to enforce more of the county's rural 20-mile-per-hour speed limits. Kay Mason-Billig, the Conservative leader at County Hall, said she had been pressing Sarah Taylor, the council's police and crime commissioner, over the issue. Her comments came as her authority agreed to pump more than £380,000 into safety improvements in scores of towns and villages. More than 30 villages and towns will get vehicle-activated signs, urging drivers to slow down, as part of her council's parish partnership scheme, which will see 99 roads benefit from safety improvements. Mrs Mason-Billig, who represents Loddon, said, "Vehicle-activated signs are a great idea. Speeding is the bane of my life. I'm always banging on about it. I don't understand why people cannot do 20 miles an hour in a village or town setting. There's no need to go any faster. All you do is risk the lives of pedestrians trying to traverse the same route at the same time." Mrs Mason-Billig said she understood that speed cameras to catch and fine drivers were costly, costing up to £80,000 with maintenance costs on top of that. So it was hardly surprising we did not see many of those. However, she said, "We could do with a bit more enforcement, and I have spoken to the police and crime commissioner about it. If we could have some more enforcement in areas where we have particular problems, I think it would help." Department for Transport's guidance is that 20-mile-per-hour zones and speed limits should be generally self-enforcing, given road conditions and measures such as signs and traffic calming. Norfolk Constabulary has previously said it does not routinely enforce 20-mile-per-hour limits and zones. But the force has said it will do so if clear evidence of significant non-compliance or injury collision history supports such action. Mrs. Mason-Billig made her comments at a meeting of the Cabinet at County Hall on Monday, where councillors agreed to provide £384,000 towards the authority's Parish Partnerships Scheme. That money will be matched by towns and parish councils on road safety schemes, including vehicle-activated cameras, but also signs, traffic calming and footpaths.
And staying with the roads and hopes for more A47 duelling, including that of the notorious Acle Strait, have been dampened, with the minister saying there are no immediate plans for further investment in the road. Campaigners have long called for more of the route, Norfolk's arterial road, to be duelled, with the Acle Strait between Acle and Great Yarmouth one of the main priorities. However, during a visit to the £200 million revamp work at Thickthorn Roundabout, Roads Minister Simon Lightwood said the government was not currently planning any further investment in the A47. He said, "We have no plans at the moment, but I know National Highways are aware of concerns about safety there, and they will look at some targeted interventions across the route to tackle that. We have conversations with local authorities and National Highways all the time about a huge range of schemes. We are always listening, and I think that they will be backed up by evidence in terms of value for money. What will it unlock and how will it improve safety? We have to take a careful balance on these decisions to make sure we are putting in the right investment in the right places to get the right results." Work to duel two sections of the A47 from Blowfield to North Burlingham and Easton to North Tuddenham is underway, along with the project to revamp the Thickthorn Roundabout. A hurdle which was preventing any further duelling of the 6.8-mile Acle Strait had been the presence of protected little whirlpool ramshorn snails, which are on the endangered international red list. But last year, the successive trials to relocate the tiny gastropods, which measure less than a fifth of an inch in diameter, had raised hopes the government might finally decide to pump millions of pounds into the duelling. But looks like now we'll have to be content with the 50-mile-an-hour limit, which I think hopefully seems to be working well. So there is some light at the end of the tunnel, or the end of the road, should I say.
Well, if you ever plan to motor west, Jack, take my way, it's the highway that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. Well, it winds from Chicago to L.A. More than 2,000 miles all the way. Get your kicks on Route 66. Well, it goes from St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, Oklahoma City, looks so, so pretty, you see. Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingsman, Warsaw, San Bernardino. Won't you get hip to this kindly tip, Jack, and take that California trip. Get your kicks on Route 66.
A leading mental health charity has stepped in to offer support after the sudden closure of an organisation which ran key wellbeing services across Norfolk and Waveney. Norfolk and Waveney Mind said it was saddened to learn that the Access Community Trust had ceased operating at midnight on Wednesday, bringing an immediate end to services such as the Steamhouse cafes in Galston and King's Lynn. The charity provided supported housing and community-based services for vulnerable people. Its cafes were widely used as drop-in spaces for people seeking mental health support, and their loss has left a gap in provision across the area. In a statement, Norfolk and Waveney Mind said its thoughts were with those affected by the shutdown and stressed that alternative help remains available. As Norfolk and Waveney's leading mental health charity, we want to reassure our community that we are here to offer support where we can, a spokesperson said. Mind runs a range of services across the region, including mental health hubs, recovery workers based in GP surgeries, and a daily telephone triage service open from 9:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. The charity also plans to set up pop-up mental health drop-ins in Great Yarmouth, Galston and Waveney, with details to be announced once staffing is confirmed. Those seeking immediate help can contact the Norfolk and Waveney Mind Triage Line on 0300 330 5488 or visit www.norfolkandwavenymind.org.uk. Additional support is available through NHS 111, option 2, or by calling Samaritans on 116 123. The closure of the Lowestoft-based Access Community Trust follows years of involvement in mental health and community work across Norfolk and Suffolk, and its absence has already prompted concern among those who relied on its services. The Trust was formed in 1975, when it started out as a homeless night shelter in Lowestoft. It supported thousands of people over the years through a range of community hubs and dedicated initiatives. Nearly 100 staff lost their jobs on payday on Wednesday.
A seafront cafe and boating lake on the Yarmouth seafront is preparing to open under new management. The Little Venetian is the new name for the venue at Great Yarmouth's famous boating lake, the tourist attraction located on the town's North Drive. The site will be run by local businesswoman Sophie Parks, who said she was absolutely elated to be managing the business, which will reopen in time for the Easter holidays. In the meantime, the cafe is being refurbished to create what Miss Parks describes as a modern yet relaxing ambience. There will be more food options, with a strong focus on using local producers wherever possible, and a range of options available to suit different dietary needs, including gluten-free and dairy-free choices. Beyond food and boating, Miss Parks wants the Little Venetian to become a community well-being hub, and the attraction will host well-being days, yoga sessions and fitness activities, working in collaboration with local businesses to support health, connection and mindful living. The site was previously run by the Lowestoft-based Access Community Trust, the charity that suddenly folded last week, as we just mentioned in the previous item. After their tenancy ended last November, Ms. Parks submitted a business plan to Great Yarmouth Borough Council, which was accepted in January of this year. It was a case of second time lucky for the businesswoman, who had seen a previous application to run the cafe turned down by the authority. She's lived in Great Yarmouth all her life and used to visit the cafe and boating lake as a child, as did many of us indeed. Hope she has a great success there too.
Yes, wish her well. A beer festival featuring international and UK brews is coming to Great Yarmouth and Galston. The 12-day Real Ale event will take place at the Troll Cart on Regent Road and the William Adams on High Street in Galston from March the 4th to the 15th. Up to 20 real ales will be available, including 5 from overseas breweries in Brazil, Italy, Mexico, Spain and the USA. Daniel Bullion, manager of the Troll Cart, said, "The festival is a great celebration of real ale. It will allow us to showcase a selection of superb beers, featuring many not previously available to our customers in the pub, including those from brewers as far afield as Mexico and Brazil, as well as those closer to home, over a 12-day period. All the beers will be available at great value-for-money prices. Almost all the beers on offer have been brewed for the first time, exclusively for the festival, with 3 suitable for vegans and vegetarians. Flavours include coffee, elderflower, hibiscus, maple syrup, orange and vanilla."
And staying on the ale trail, staying on the Wetherspoons trail actually, Wetherspoons has revealed the name of their new pub in a Norfolk holiday park. The venue, located at Haven's Hopton Holiday Village, will be called the White Clover. And the pub chain says it was named after the flower grown across the county representing good luck. The pub, which will only be accessible to Haven guests and caravan owners, will open this spring, and it will trade solely during the park's operating season from February to October. Simon Palethorpe, the chief executive of Haven, said, "The naming of the Jadeen Wetherspoons pubs is highly anticipated and always reveals an interesting historical, geographical or cultural reference to the area." I think we should get in touch with Sir Tim Martin as well, the boss of Wetherspoons. We've name-checked him enough in these last two items. Perhaps he can help us out.
Maybe. The world's best dart players have descended on a Norfolk village for a weekend of amazing entertainment. Top professionals, including James Wade, Nathan Aspinall and Damon Heater, made the trip to Hemsby to inspire the next generation of darts stars. A darts team from Great Yarmouth and hundreds of visitors had the opportunity to meet the stars at a darts weekend at Richardson's Hemsby Beach Holiday Park. James Bensley, a Hemsby councillor, said, "What an amazing entertainment experience we had at Hemsby. We have seen all the stars at Alexandra Palace, and then to see them at Hemsby was fantastic. The feel-good factor is back. We have the general public participation and great sessions. We were actually having conversations with stars on the TV." The event, hosted by Zeal Sports Management, also included training lessons from the professionals, Q&A sessions, competitions and tournaments. Preparation is already underway for next year's event, which will be held on February the 11th to the 15th. You can get your tickets for the event next year on the Zeal Sports Management website.
Moving away from darts and onto the seafront, Great Yarmouth Borough Council has approved plans from William Abbott, co-owner of the Observation Wheel UK Limited, to relocate Yarmouth's 50-metre-high Yarmouth Eye to a plot previously used for a slingshot ride. A bid to move the Ferris wheel along Great Yarmouth seafront has been given the go-ahead by the council. The wheel will shift around 50 metres north to the South Beach Gardens, where it will sit on new decking with ramp access, a supporting structure and a ticket office. Planning officers acknowledge that the move would cause some harm to the conservation area and to the setting of the Grade 2 listed Windmill Cinema, as well as continued, though reduced, harm to the setting of the Winter Gardens. But they concluded that the benefits of allowing a well-established attraction to keep operating for a temporary four-year period outweighed those concerns, saying it would support the vitality and viability of the borough's tourism economy. The report notes that the wheel draws visitors from nearby holiday accommodation and may encourage linked trips to the Winter Gardens, potentially offering a small boost to efforts to restore the landmark. However, planners insisted the wheel cannot operate at the new site until a public art scheme for its base has been approved and installed. Previous permissions granted in 2022 and 24 required artwork to be added to the solid hoardings around the wheel, but the graphics were never installed, leaving what officers described as a blank and uninviting temporary appearance in the street scene. Well, that's a good bit of compromise, isn't it?
A family-run bar which has helped bring rock and roll back to a seaside village is set to celebrate its first anniversary this month. Harley's Bar at Seabreeze Caravan Park on Newport Road in Hemsby will mark 1 year since opening with an Elvis anniversary show on Saturday the 14th of March. Tribute performer Jake Rivers will take to the stage from 8:30pm as part of the celebrations, which are open to holidaymakers and local residents. The venue, which had stood disused for several years, has been transformed into a busy community hub with regular live music, cash bingo and live sport on big screens. The bar is dog-friendly and welcomes visitors from across Hemsby's holiday parks, as well as people living in the village. Since opening last year, Harley's has hosted a string of rock and roll nights and staged its own Harley Fest event in August. In its first few months, the team also launched a fundraiser for a heart-to-heart defibrillator and bleed kit, raising enough money within weeks to get the life-saving equipment installed and operational outside the bar.
And a new takeaway has opened in a town centre premises that had been empty for years. Flavour Tree is selling curry, pizzas, noodles and kebabs from their fast food restaurant at 127 Galston High Street. Ronnie Alley, manager of the takeaway, said it's a good area to run a business. He and his brother have experience in the food industry, having run other restaurants across Norfolk, including Ronnie's Indian Dining in Dereham and Indian Spoon in Wroxham. The food at the new takeaway, bringing noodles, curry and pizza under one roof, is prepared by three chefs. "We want to make it affordable for everyone, so our prices are very low," Mr. Ali said. The takeaway offers 10% discount for students and NHS staff, and Flavour Tree is open from Wednesday to Monday from noon till 11 p.m. The property was once actually home to a branch of Platten's department store and was later a beauty and tanning salon called Urban Oasis, which closed in 2021.
More than £10,000 worth of vape products have been stolen from a shop in Galston. The incident happened at a store in the High Street on the 8th of February. The doors of a shop were forced open during the early hours of the morning between 3 and 5 a.m. As well as vape products, £200 in cash was also taken from the store, and officers believe three men were involved. Police have now released CCTV images of two men they would like to speak to in connection with the theft. Anyone who recognises the individuals in the images or possesses any information that could aid the ongoing investigation is urged to contact Norfolk Constabulary, quoting the reference number 36/9227/26.
Three Vietnamese immigrants were found locked inside a large industrial unit alongside hundreds of cannabis plants worth up to £237,000, a court has heard. Minh Vu Nguyen, age 23, Quoc Chen Phan, age 23, and Van Harden again, aged 29, were all found in the warehouse, which was padlocked from the outside, alongside more than 300 cannabis plants. Norwich Crown Court heard the unit on Swanston's Road in Yarmouth was raided by police on July the 15th last year. Laurie Tucker, prosecuting, said the building, which was fitted with CCTV, contained a maze of 11 rooms. She said two of these contained cannabis grows, one with 213 plants, between 2 feet and 6 feet tall, and the other with 103 plants up to 3 feet in height. The court heard the grow was capable of producing between 9.5 and 17 kilo of the drug. The prosecutor said the street value of the 316 plants found was said to be between £95,000 and £237,000. She said the remaining nine rooms were fully set up to produce cannabis, although none were in use at the time. However, Ms. Tucker said there was evidence that they had been recently harvested. She said all three defendants were found in the living area of the unit, which had a kitchen, toilet and shower. She said phones attributed to the defendants were found and contained images which showed they had been involved in the growing of cannabis at the property. The three defendants, all of no fixed abode and who spoke through a Vietnamese interpreter, appeared for sentencing on Monday. All three had initially denied the offences, claiming they were victims of modern slavery, but all subsequently pleaded guilty to cannabis production. There was an industrial warehouse and 11 rooms inside it had been set up and equipped to grow cannabis. The operation was an ongoing large-scale operation capable of producing industrial quantities of commercial use, and Judge Shaw accepted none of the defendants were able to make money here legally. But he insisted they had made a decision to come to this country unlawfully, knowing that the only way you could have earned money was by committing crime. He said it was likely all three would be deported at the end of their sentences. Charles Myatt, mitigating for Minh Vu Nguyen, said he had come to the country illegally 6 years ago before being forcibly encouraged to come to this industrial unit and water the plants. Charles Myatt said he was not a mastermind but a foot soldier in the operation and had been playing a lesser role and had only been there a matter of weeks. Ian James, representing Van Harten Guyen, said his client came to the UK illegally in 2019 and had worked in a nail bar before begging and was then recruited to the cannabis factory. He said he had been there for about a month at the factory, which had already been set up, and he was responsible for tending to plants. Mr. James said it was a two-room operation when he became involved and never anything else. Daniel O'Donovan, representing Kwok Chen Phan, said he had been, to some extent, exploited due to the lack of legal work opportunities.
An energy company has raised fears of major accidents over plans to build a service station at McDonald's drive-through restaurant on the edge of Great Yarmouth. RWE owns a high-pressure gas pipeline which crosses the site at the junction of Yarmouth Road and the Caister Bypass, where developers want to build a petrol station, McDonald's and drive-through coffee shop. The company says the current plans would see buildings constructed in very close proximity to the pipeline, which connects Bacton Gas Terminal to Great Yarmouth Power Station. In a letter to planning officials at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, the energy firm says this raises significant health concerns in relation to a heightened risk of major accidents during construction and operation of the development. It stresses it is not against the principle of development on this site, but will maintain its objection until the layout is changed to provide adequate pipeline protection and suitable separation distances from buildings. RWE says it is willing to work with the applicant to ensure a suitable development layout is achieved. The health and safety executive, which was initially consulted because the site lies within the consultation distance of a major hazard pipeline, is no longer objecting to the plans after being told the pipe is laid in thick-walled sections. The plans are also facing objections from 8 members of the public. One said they were very worried about the proximity of the pipeline, as well as Norfolk County Council, which noted the absence of an acceptable flood risk assessment. Anglian Water has objected, saying two large sewer pipes cross the site and cannot be built over.
The leader of Norfolk County Council has come in for fresh criticism over her claim that devolution and a huge council shake-up are, quote, off. Kay Mason-Billig, the Conservative leader at County Hall, last month launched a tirade against local government secretary Steve Reid after what she described as election hokey-cokey. During that speech, which followed the Labour government announcing May's county and city elections were back on after previously postponing them, Mrs. Mason-Billig said, "I can tell you today that devolution and local government reform are off. The Conservative group is resolved that we will not be assisting this government to deliver local government reform, commonly known as LGR. She continued, "The Conservative group is resolved that we will not be assisting this at all." Her remarks had come under fire from political opponents, including those who said it was not up to the council to decide whether local government reorganisation happened. That decision was up to the government. And at a meeting of the council's cabinet on Monday, March the 2nd, she was questioned about her remarks. Brian Watkins, leader of the opposition Liberal Democrat group, and his party colleague Rob Colwell asked on what authority she had chosen to halt devolution and local government reorganisation. Mrs. Mason-Billig replied, "We are currently unable to proceed with the statutory instrument because we have not yet received the revised version from government. By the time it is issued, we will be in the pre-election period, which means we cannot lawfully take it through our required legal and constitutional processes before the election. This does not mean that the devolution or local government reorganisation is dead. It means it is delayed. The incoming administration, once elected, will be able to consider the statutory instrument and, if it chooses, proceed with signing up to the arrangements." But after the meeting, Mr. Watkins said, "We saw her abrupt public declaration last month that devolution and LGR were off, which has contradicted years of officer work, cross-party negotiation and public expectation." Watch this space.
A village has won permission to extend its car park after wet weather and parking problems forced the cancellation of a major fundraiser and sparked safety fears on the main road. Great Yarmouth Borough Council approved a planning application by Flegborough Village Hall to build hard surfacing in order to extend its current car park, providing an additional 37 spaces. The proposal also includes accompanying work on landscaping, planting, CCTV and lighting. The Village Hall is located to the south of the A1064 near Great Yarmouth, and set back from the main road, with a children's playground in front. The approval of the plans followed the cancellation of a Christmas 2025 fundraiser at the venue due to parking concerns after rain, which cost the local church about £800. The village hall hosts 13 clubs a week, plus regular PE for the primary school, weekly post office, private parties and fundraisers. Around 40 cars using the car park twice a day for school drop-off and pick-up. The proposals will extend the facility to the south, behind the village hall and bowling green. The planning bid saw 14 representations received in the public consultation, with 11 in support and 3 objecting to the plans.
Ormiston Venture Academy in Galston took 53 of its students to Valencia for an unforgettable football trip on Spain's Mediterranean coast. Students got to develop their football skills and enjoy some memorable cultural experiences. Ian McAnally, assistant principal of Ormiston Academy, said, "This tour was an incredible opportunity for our students to experience football at a professional level while developing independence and also teamwork. They represented the academy exceptionally well and demonstrated real determination and maturity throughout the trip. We are extremely proud of the way they embraced every challenge and opportunity, and I'm sure it is an experience they will remember for years to come." The trip kicked off with a behind-the-scenes tour of Valencia FC's Mestalla Stadium before students trained at the club's training centre, working with elite coaches to enhance their technical skills and tactical understanding. They got to watch Valencia's women's first team and under-17 squads in training, and the girls' team valiantly fought back to win their tour match 3-1. Students then soaked up the atmosphere of the La Liga game between Elche and Osasuna before heading home.
Dances in the rain.
Well, welcome to Grapevine Extra. Alison and I both have a piece here for you today. Alison's going to start off. She has an article, I believe, on road names and how they came about, Alison, yes?
That's right, yes.
Over to you.
Thank you. Almost every week, the Mercury contains reports about incidents in particular streets in the borough. I thought it would be interesting to look at how some of these got their names. Maybe some of our listeners live in a street mentioned below. Howard Street, home of the police station, divided into north and south, was formerly known as Charlotte Street, after Queen Charlotte, wife of King George III. But even before that, it had been called Blind Middle Street, presumably because it had a blind end near one of the rows. Queen Charlotte must have fallen from favour, because the street was then renamed after the Howard family, who have been Dukes of Norfolk for many centuries. Howard Street was notorious in the 19th century, when one resident complained that it was swarming with brothels, a situation which was only remedied in the 1960s when the whole street was pulled down. Regent Road was named after Queen Charlotte's son, the future King George IV. Originally, it was just a track in the sand across the dunes to the Middle Well. Then there is Alexandra Road, after Queen Alexandra, wife of King Edward VII, and Clarence and Avondale Roads in Galston, named after their son, Prince Albert Victor, who had titles of the same names. Victoria Road in Galston hardly needs explaining. Some roads were named after people or events in the First World War. For example, Admiral David Beatty was commander of the Royal Navy's battle cruisers at the Battle of Jutland in 1916, whilst Admiral John Jellicoe was commander of the fleet. Admiral Frederick Sturdee was commander of two battle cruisers at the Battle of the Falkland Islands in 1914, and Rear Admiral Christopher Craddock was another Navy hero. Admiral Charles Beresford was a rival of Admiral Beatty, and Admiral Roger Keyes was commander of the Dover Patrol, which stopped U-boats in 1918. Churchill was First Lord of the Admiralty in 1915, and Field Marshal Herbert Kitchener was Secretary of State for War in 1914, until he died in 1916 on a ship that was sunk on its way to Russia. Lord Claude Hamilton was Chairman of the Great Eastern Railway. Sir Henry Havelock and Sir Garnet Wolseley served in the Indian Army in the 19th century. Sir Arthur Wellesley, Duke of Wellington, was the victor at Waterloo. His private home in London was Apsley House. Beaconsfield Road was named after Benjamin Disraeli, the Earl of Beaconsfield. Estcourt Road was named after the chairman of the Board of Guardians of the former workhouse, now the site of the old Northgate Hospital. Palgrave Road bears the name of a former chairman of the Trustees and Governors of Great Yarmouth Grammar School, now the Great Yarmouth Charter Academy. In Galston, Manby Road is named after George Manby, captain of the Great Yarmouth Barracks, which used to stand on the site of the current Sainsbury's. Burnt Lane in Galston refers to a serious fire in 1538. Addison Road commemorates Addison Williamson, the owner of Coolunga House on Galston High Road. Frederick Road, Danby Road and Palmer Road in Galston are all named after Frederick Danby Palmer, the owner of a large estate and mayor of Great Yarmouth in the 1880s. William Anson, Earl of Lichfield, was a navigator, while his descendant, Thomas Anson, was given the title Earl of Lichfield for his service as Postmaster General in the 1830s. Lawn Avenue in Great Yarmouth had nothing to do with the grassy area, but was named after Frederick Lawn, who was mayor at the time the road was built in 1931. Sidegate and Tollgate roads indicate that there was once a turnpike or toll road. Pedestrians would walk through a side gate so that the keeper didn't have to raise the toll bar. Then there are roads named after great writers, Byron and Shakespeare, or after Dickensian characters, Micawber and Peggotty. In Galston, the roads on the Magdalen Estate all bear the names of Oxford colleges, while the Shrublands Estate is trees and flowers. And the more unusual, such as Humber Keel and Lawyer Corey's on the Cliff Park estate, are based on the names of old Yarmouth Rows. The list could go on. Who knows how the road names in all the new estates under construction will be chosen?
That's fascinating, and it's nice to know all that history is beneath our feet, as it were, as we walk along.
Yes.
Well, from the streets to the skies now, and I'm going to tell you about one of the most iconic planes that has graced the 20th century, really. Not the Spitfire, which celebrates, in actual fact, this week its 90th birthday, but this is a more modern but still unmistakable aircraft. Its first pilot named it Big Bird. Its two front windows and movable nose did indeed give it an avian appearance. And today, in 1969, for the very first time, it flew like a bird. Taking off from Toulouse, Concorde, cheered by anxious spectators, flew for almost half an hour. It flew then at a sedate pace, rather than the supersonic speeds, double the speed of sound, for which it was designed. Its first supersonic flight took place later that year. It was a symbol, as its name implies, of cooperation between Britain and France, with companies from both countries having worked together on its design and construction. As released government papers have revealed, significant doubts have existed regarding the project's commercial viability, with fears that it might prove only an embarrassing and colossal expense, a white elephant rather than a white bird. Its fuel consumption was huge, and at the time of its development, an oil crisis, making fuel very expensive, prevented it from entering the lucrative market for planes crossing the Pacific. The loud sonic boom which took place when the sound barrier was passed was banned over land, meaning that supersonic flight could only be transoceanic. Development costs were vastly higher than anticipated. Only the absorption of these by the British and French governments and high ticket prices allowed its operation to be viable. A mere 20 aircraft were built, and only 7 were flown by each country. In spite of everything, though, Concorde would become a much-loved and much-admired institution, and it still holds the record for the fastest transatlantic passenger flight of just 2 hours, 52 minutes and 59 seconds, set in 1996 with a roaring tailwind. But high oil prices and, of course, the terrible crash in Paris in 2000 forced its retirement from service in 2003. Well, that's it for this week's recording, which is copyright of the Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. A reminder of our website address, which is www.grapevinegy.org, where the latest edition is always available, and also a contact button for getting in touch. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from you on your views, any ideas you have from our programmes. Now, next week, your newsreaders will be not Charlie's Angels, but Grapevine's very own Fallen Angels. That, of course, Dusty, Julie and Margaret too. So look forward. My thanks this week to Alison for producing all the news items this week. And as always, to our dedicated backroom staff for ensuring you get your recordings to your door. And in the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe, stay well, and bye for now. Bye.